So today on the program, we're focusing on the Affordable Housing Trust Fund here in Quincy. Sean Glennon, Sherry Zoe from the Planning Department have stopped on by to educate us about this unique opportunity here in Quincy. So Sean and Sherry, great to see you both. Thanks for coming over.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, I know we've talked about the trust fund in the past, but it's been a while. And I thought it'd be a good opportunity to do a little bit of a refresher and also an update because some things are changed from last time we talked about it. So maybe, Sean, start with you if that's okay. What is the Affordable Housing Trust Fund?
Well, it's a committee and a fund that's existed for 25 years now, actually. And the jurisdiction of the trust is any project of 10 residential units or more in which a special permit or variance is needed. That's an important distinction, because if a developer comes in and wants to build 10 or more units by right, that means without a variance or a special permit, it doesn't trigger coming before the trust.
Okay.
But that's really where it comes into play, is where if a developer needs a variance, special permit to build a project, then that's what triggers the trust. And that's sort of what makes up for getting the permit, is if you're gonna get a little something extra for more units, then you need to give something back to the city, either in terms of units on-site, off-site, or a fee in lieu of units, which then would be used to create affordable housing somewhere else in the city.
Okay, and is it up to the developer to decide if they want to pay a fee or develop the affordable housing?
We give them the choice to make a recommendation as to what they would ask for, and then the trust weighs that heavily based on what that request is, because sometimes we know that the trust may want to take the units on a project, but sometimes it just won't pencil financially. And so in those cases, that the trust would cater more towards the wishes of the developer and take the money instead.
I see, okay. So the trust is how is it governed? How is it managed?
We have the chairman is the planning director by charter. So it'd be Jim Fatsies right now, but whoever the planning director is who it is by default. The executive director is Tom Fabrizio, special assistant to the mayor. And then there are 12 members that are appointed by the mayor, but the makeup of the committee is governed by the IZO, the Inclusionary Zoning Ordinance, which determines how they're made up either by a member of the banking community, a CHODO, which is a community housing development organization, faith-based member, community member. So it's the ordinance that dictates what those categories are, but it's the mayor that appoints the members.
Okay, and does every community have an affordable housing trust fund?
No. It's something that every municipality can have if they want. They need to approve by their city council or whatever their government system is. But something that Quincy adopted almost 25 years ago, and we have some great accomplishments to prove since then.
Yeah, maybe we could just give a couple of examples just for folks to kind of visualize what the trust has already accomplished here in the city.
Yeah, so we know of 655 units that have been created through the trust.
Since it was founded,
okay. Yeah. Primarily, those are ones that were funded by the trust, so created through a local nonprofit such as Quincy Community Action Programs or NeighborWorks Housing Solutions. We've also given money to groups like the Quincy Housing Authority and some other smaller developers. So the majority have been funded by the trust, but also a number of on-site and off-site units as well that are contained within some of these developments.
Right, and so how does the trust determine which projects to fund?
There's an application process.
Okay.
The trust meets monthly when there's business that comes before the organization. But we have a formal application. The committee will meet, discuss, compare to other applications, compare to how much funding might be available in free cash. Obviously, that's something we need to consider. And then they'll make a decision as to how much they think should be awarded to that project.
I see. And so how much is in the trust right now?
We have about $3.3 million of what we consider free cash.
Okay.
So there's actually more in the account, but some of it's already committed to other projects that we pay as they go. And then we also like to have a reserve for emergencies. Mm. There have been a number over recent years. We gave $1 million in rental assistance in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, $1 million to the Father Bill's Housing Resource Center, $1 million for emergency rehab in the wake of the 2018 flood. So we do like to keep some, kind of as a rainy day fund. But there's significant amount in there that could be used for projects coming forward.
And are there current projects in the works that the trust is helping to fund?
Well, I think the biggest one that we're working on now is the housing, the historic preservation project on Spear Street, which is actually pretty exciting. It's a renovation of of an historic site, mm-hmm. which will then be converted to affordable housing. It's the first case that I know of that where the trust has awarded funds for a historic preservation slash affordable housing project.
Is so that
it's
right?
pretty exciting.
Okay.
Right in
the backyard right here. Yeah, it's an old farmhouse essentially from the 1800s.
Exactly. Cesspear Homestead.
Yeah.
It's a very exciting project. So we know there'll be another allocation. The trust did fund the acquisition of the
yep.
project, of the site rather, but there'll be more funds needed for the actual conversion to housing as that project gets further underway.
Okay, all right. So how does the trust determine, you know, how much a developer pays into it? How does that process work?
There is a fee-based system, so we have a calculation that actually Sherry determines for us in partnership with the Department of Municipal Finance, which helps us with that part of it. But depending on, you know, how big the project is, the number of units, the costs of acquiring the site, the cost of the materials, mm-hmm, or the mm-hmm. quality of the materials, quality of the overall project, those numbers get put into this formula, which would give us a number of what the fee in lieu should be.
Okay, and is there does the trust have to spend the money that it has? Is there a deadline or a timeline or no?
No deadline.
Okay.
No. So over over 25 years, money has come in, money's gone out, but
right.
there's no sort of cap or deadline on when it has to get out, which is a nice feature actually, because some of these projects are very expensive and it takes time for the trust to build up a reserve.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it very useful when a big project comes through. It gives us the opportunity to fund some of the larger ones.
Yeah. Now when we say affordable housing, you know, what is that? What is affordable housing these days?
That's one of the challenges.
Yeah.
Is that there's really no standard definition. There are different types of affordable housing.
All right.
But you know, affordable housing is generally thought to be housing in which a tenant is spending less than it's an income-based program. So we tend to think about people that are making 80% or less of the area median income.
Okay.
Which for our area, the Boston, Cambridge, Quincy area,
yeah.
is about $160,000 a year.
Okay.
And then the affordable housing itself needs to be capped at certain rent limits,
yes.
whether it's a studio, one bedroom, two bedroom. So it gets a little bit complicated when we're talking about definitions of who qualifies and what the rents are.
Right.
But in general, we're talking about people that are making less than 80% of the area median income and are paying rents that are meet the requirements under our income tables as determined by HUD and adopted by the trust on an annual basis.
So,
and I can add a little to specific numbers.
Great.
For example, the fair market rent for a studio in Quincy as determined by HUD currently is $2,263. So that's the rent that they would consider it's a fair market, which that's what they use for the housing choice. For the voucher program.
Okay.
And then for a two-bedroom rent, it's $2,837. So that's the so-called fair market rent.
Right.
But for any of the projects that the trust funds, for example, the trust sets a much lower rent limit, understanding the current market in Quincy specifically. For the trust units, we ask for a studio, it's $1,861. That's the limit that the trust sets.
Okay.
And put it in perspective, for a two bedroom would be $2,397.
Okay. And so for folks to qualify to get those rents, how do they do that?
It would be under the 80% area median income.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it depends on the number of members in their household.
Mm-hmm. 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 And is it open, is it just for Quincy residents?
It's open for anyone that qualifies for under that limit.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it could be newcomers to the city.
Yes.
And qualify if they meet that guideline.
It really depends on the program.
Mm-hmm.
The state, in order to get a unit put on what's called the subsidized housing inventory, which is really how the state determines where we are in terms of meeting our affordable housing goals, it allows us to have a residency, essentially a provision where you can have roughly up to 70% of local residents qualify for a project.
Yep.
But not all projects get put on the subsidized housing inventory, so it depends on, it's kind of project by project, but there's generally a lottery system, in some cases a residency preference, but it it's something that every project is open to the public, mm-hmm. But it depends on where the project is, you know, where the lottery, you know, process would start.
Okay.
There's not like one single, you know, application platform for folks to apply.
Oh, okay. So like that's a rolling basis.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. So, I mean, is there a waiting list? I mean, is yes.
There are multiple waiting lists. That's kind of the problem. Is okay. That it's not a one-stop shop.
Yeah.
You know, the state has a waiting list. Housing authorities have a waiting list. You know, some of our developers have a waiting list for their projects.
Yes.
So it's a blessing and a curse that there are so many different types of projects with so many different types of qualifications. But it does make it more onerous on the tenant that is looking for affordable housing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So is Quincy, you know, meeting its goals for affordable housing?
We are. You know, so this SHI, the subsessive inventory, is kind of the standard test for whether communities are meeting their obligations. And the state has set a goal of 10% for every community to have 10% of the units set aside as affordable housing. And every 10 years, we get to the 10%, and then the new census comes out, and we fall under because it shows that additional housing units have been developed, there are more people. And so it's always something that we're trying to eat away at. So we met 10% under the last census. The new one came out, dropped us now to 9%.
Okay.
So it's still a lot of units, but it's, you know, short of the 10%. And the reason why that's significant is because if a community has less than 10% of the units designated as affordable housing, it does make them vulnerable to, you know, what's considered a 40B mm-hmm. project coming through, which would mean that it could be a development in which there'd be more densely populated affordable housing than what would normally be allowed by regular zoning.
Yes.
And so sometimes that's a concern by, right. You know, sometimes there are some NIMBY, you know, concerns that develop over that.
Project on Old Colony Avenue comes to mind.
That was one of them, yeah. Right, exactly. But the 10% is the standard threshold, but there are actually two other tests that can be met, and we actually meet the second one, which is if your total land area has a certain percentage of affordable housing, then you meet that test.
Mm-hmm.
And the second test is if 1.5% of total land is used as affordable housing, you meet the threshold. And we're actually closer to 3% right now. We're actually about 60 acres over what we need to in terms of affordable housing. So to kind of put it in that sense, mm-hmm. in terms of land area as opposed to units, we actually have met that test.
Okay.
And so it's something that folks can take a little peace of mind knowing that, you know, that the city could avoid a 40B project if one came up under that threshold.
Based on two of the three.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, that's not one that the state keeps track of regularly because it's a much more complicated threshold to track, whereas the units are much more easy to keep track of.
Of course, Quincy's basically built out, right? I mean, there's not a lot of open space left to build on, so we're talking about redeveloping existing properties.
Exactly. You know, I've been with the city for 20 years now in the planning department, and every 5 years we have a consolidated plan through HUD, and we've been using the term built out for 20 years now,
right.
And yet, you know, we increased our population by more than 10%.
Right. And yet, well, in the last 5 years, we permitted over 2,000 brand new units.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we're considered built out.
Right.
You know.
And how are we able to do that, Sherry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of, you know, we see developers oftentimes they combine different parcels as well to be able to do that. A lot of times if the space allows, sometimes a single family, if you're in the right zone for a multi-family unit, you could possibly build from, you know, even if it's a one single family, you can perhaps build a 5-unit there as long as, you know, everything makes sense for that area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way really we're seeing the way we can possibly add any units to the current housing stock.
And also can go up in certain areas, right? Maybe not out, but depending on height restrictions.
That's right,
can go up, like in, like in the urban redevelopment areas for certain, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Right. Taking some of those 1 and 2 story buildings and making them, you know, potentially 10 or, you know, even 15.
Yes.
Trying to keep the retail on the first floor to keep that neighborhood feel in these areas.
Right, exactly. So in terms of Quincy comparing to, you know, similar sized and demographically similar communities, where does the city stand in terms of affordable housing?
We know, I think we're doing our more than our fair share because although Boston is over 10%, we know that, you know, Braintree is at 9% like we are.
Okay.
Weymouth is 7.5%. Milton's only 6.5%, you know, affordable on their SHI. So You know, there's always more work to be done, and even though we've met that second threshold, for example, that doesn't mean we're going to stop, you know, encouraging developers to produce more affordable housing or the local nonprofits, and it doesn't mean we're going to stop investing in it. We know for every unit that we do have available, there are three other units that are needed based on income qualifications. It doesn't mean that everybody, you know, in the city is looking for an affordable housing unit, but we know that the need is certainly very great, and so we'll continue to do what we can to encourage new affordable housing development.
Yeah. How many more units does Quincy need to kind of meet that 10% unit threshold?
Well, we're about 450 to 500 units short under that 10%. But one of the frustrating things for us is that there are almost 20 programs that the state doesn't allow you to count units for. One of them, for example, would be mobile voucher holders. So we know that if a project-based voucher, which there are several that the Quincy Housing Authority uses, those are sites that are, they're specific vouchers for that site. So they're in Quincy, they're going to stay in Quincy. We can count those ones, that makes sense.
Okay.
They don't allow us to count what are called tenant-based vouchers or mobile vouchers, because it could mean that they might be here today, but they might be somewhere else, another community next year. But for the time that they're in Quincy, we should be able to count those units because they are affordable housing in Quincy. So we know of at least 450 of those units that we're not able to count. So it would only make us about 20 units short if we could count some of those other programs. So that's a little frustrating. It's something I wish the legislature would maybe work on to allow us to count those units. But until they do, we're several short, unfortunately.
So once a unit is considered affordable under the guidelines, does it stay affordable, or can it revert back to market rate if that tenant, you know, no longer lives there?
It all depends on the restriction that's placed on the project.
Okay.
Sometimes, depending on what the program used, funds that were used to fund that project, sometimes there's a 15-year, 30-year restriction on it, in perpetuity that would be forever. Mm-hmm. So it all depends.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Even on the subsidized housing inventory that we spoke earlier, that is a moving target too. We have units that we add on when they qualify, but there are also units that are currently on the list that might be possibly taken away because the affordability period could expire.
Yeah, and does it work the opposite way as well? Like, could a fair market unit become an affordable unit under those guidelines?
Absolutely, yes. And that's one of the toolkits that I think the trust tries to work on, is by providing subsidy to some of these market rate projects.
Yep.
In return, we get to place the affordable housing restriction on those.
Okay.
And related to that, I'd like to mention that we are able to add single-family homes to the SHI as well. Those homes that fall under our Office of Healthy Homes, in which they've received housing rehab assistance, we're able to add those to the SHI for the period of affordability that they're on there. So anytime I can make a plug for Office of Healthy Homes, I want to do that, because especially for seniors, I want them to know that we have a program that can allow them to put in, you know, a new roof, new windows, siding, you know, electrical updates, plumbing repairs, things that, you know, really are, might be considered deferred maintenance, but we know can be a burdensome cost and some things.
If the roof's leaking, that's a major thing.
Absolutely. It can add to, you know, much more serious damage down the road. And so those are things that, you know, we can take care of, not necessarily repairs, but replacement, you know, which is better in the long run. Mm-hmm. We can do that, you know, for seniors and low-income households. There's no upfront costs to them. We take care of the project, you know, soup to nuts, from, you know, bidding out the job to designing it to actually making sure it gets done and closing it out.
Yep.
And the loan that we provide doesn't have to be paid back until the home is sold or transferred, which is a tremendous benefit to a lot of seniors that are, you know, struggling paycheck to paycheck. And so not only does it help them, but again, it allows us to add an affordable unit to the SHI as well. So it's really a win-win.
Yeah, is there interest on that loan, Sean?
No, 0% deferred for seniors in particular.
Okay. So it's payable only when the property is sold. So
right. If folks want to make payments on it, they're certainly welcome to.
Okay.
And there are some seniors that actually do. They'd rather
if they want to leave more of their assets to their loved ones, and they might want to pay that down.
Precisely.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
But they don't have to.
They don't have to. Okay, which is key. Right. So let me ask this. I'm a resident, or I want to be a resident in Quincy, and I want to find out if I qualify for affordable housing. How do I do this?
As long as you're the 80% area median income, let me just pull out that.
That could be a roadblock right there, Sherry. So
yes.
how does one determine if they meet the income guidelines?
That would be set by HUD.
Okay.
Yes.
How do they figure that out?
We have that posted on our website.
Okay. Do they need to do that on their own, or can you help them with that?
They can give us a call anytime, okay. And we can tell them right off the bat what the current limit is.
Okay,
yes.
Great. Okay.
And it depends on how many people in the household.
So these are questions that you would have to ask. Right.
So I have the number now. So if you are a household of four, for example, the limit is $132,300.
Okay.
If you are a one-person household, the limit is $92,650.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So anything that or below, you would qualify.
You would qualify.
Okay.
Yes.
What's the next step then? I found out I qualified. Mm-hmm. I'm good to go. Now what do I do?
Now you talk to us in the office, and we'll try to direct you to the right places.
Okay.
To the right programs. For folks that are perhaps like you looking to buy as a first-time home buyer, we have different programs too that we offer in Quincy, some through the trust. The trust have a stay, the stay in Quincy program, and then we also have some federally funded programs too.
Okay.
Yes.
And about how long does all that take?
I would say we review applications usually with a 48 hours turnaround.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And then with the closing, if you're purchasing a home,
yes,
typically within 30 days.
Really? Okay.
So we work with the lender that you select, and then at closing, we help you provide the closing costs.
Okay. Now, what if over the course of time their income increases, so they're no longer eligible? Can they still stay in that home?
Yes. Okay. So we only qualify them at the point of application.
Okay.
So if they're purchasing a home, the hope is that they do increase their income and increase their asset and stay at their home. Yeah.
Okay.
So for a tenant, it's a different situation. It's a little more complicated because it takes longer to get that unit. And then the income certification actually happens on an annual basis.
See. Okay.
So if they do go over, and it's a happy dilemma.
Because they're doing better in life, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so on a case by case basis, the trust does have the authority to increase that limit that somebody could make, at least in the short term anyway.
Yep.
To give them time
to
find
another place,
unit,
right? Yeah.
They're not being evicted.
Yeah.
But the hard part is once you're income qualified is finding a unit. And finding a tenant that's going to take you, even under like the Section 8 program.
Yeah.
We hear cases, it's heartbreaking, where somebody has been qualified for a unit, but it's on that tenant to find a place, to find a landlord that's going to take them.
Wow.
And before the subsidy kicks in. It's very hard to find somebody.
Before it kicks in.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it's very hard to find somebody that sort of that missing piece is that sort of the housing selection tenant assistance piece, which QCAP does a great job. They have some assistance to do that, but the need is just so great that it's often the burden is on the tenant to find a unit before the subsidy kicks in. Finding the unit's the hardest part. So there's a local agency called CHAPA, and they have a running list of affordable units that they know of.
CHAPA?
Citizens Housing. CHAPA.org, and they have a running list of units that they know of that are available, and maybe lotteries that are happening.
Yeah,
it's not something we keep track of because locally, it's a separate entity, and there's so many units regionally in the greater Boston area that there are other agencies that do that.
Okay, but I mean, if they're qualifying under the Quincy Affordable Housing Trust, the unit has to be in Quincy.
That's correct.
That's right. Okay. So there's no kind of clearinghouse for just Quincy affordable housing.
No, because there's so many developments that we oversee that the trust has provided funding for, but then it's up to that nonprofit or the developer to kind of run the lottery, maintain those properties on an annual basis.
So you mentioned NeighborWorks, that's one.
Right, or the Housing Authority.
Which is its own development company now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and Leo Martin, local business owner, owns a number of affordable housing properties, and so it's those developers will maintain their list and do the appropriate lottery and selection process.
Yes. Now, is this like for veterans? Is this separate from like veterans housing, or were they qualify as well?
It's not separate, but we certainly would fund veterans housing projects if they
came up.
And actually, Leo has one that we've done right here in Quincy Center.
Yes.
The Kylie property.
Oh, sure.
One that we funded through the trust.
Okay.
But Leo, you know, maintains and operates that project.
Sure, sure. Are there current projects that you can list? Or, I mean, the most recent one I can think of is the Watson down Quincy Point. But are there similar properties that are happening like that?
I wish we had more Watsons.
Really?
That one was, yeah. I wish we had, for a number of reasons. One is that it was such a large project.
Yes.
To get that number of units at once is fantastic.
Yes.
The other thing that's so unique about that, and I haven't seen it anywhere else, is it totally flipped the affordable housing model on its head, where the vast majority of those units are affordable.
Yes.
It's only a minority number that are market rate,
yes.
which is totally the opposite of what we see
Correct.
Everywhere else. Usually,
right.
it's the affordable units are the minority.
Yes.
And in doing so, there's a little bit of a loophole in the system. I hate to call it that because it's meant to encourage affordable housing, but by doing that project, we're able to count the market rate units on the subsidized housing inventory as well, even though they're not affordable.
Really?
But it's a way to encourage affordable housing, and actually, we got more affordable units out of that project by scores more
really?
Than we would
in that building
by doing that. So in the sense that there are market rate units on the SHI.
Yeah.
The flip is that we got a lot more affordable housing units out of that project.
So you think a developer would look at that and say, "Oh, I should do the same thing."
Absolutely,
right?
you'd think they'd want to, but it was such a challenging, expensive project to find that right partnership between, that was NeighborWorks, Wind Development. It just, the stars really aligned
for
that
sure.
project. And the property itself was one where it was kind of a, derelict old
True.
Building.
Yep. Right across from the shipyard there.
Exactly. Yep. Nobody really wanted it. Mm-hmm. Wasn't doing much for us on the tax rolls.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that was just a win-win for everybody. I'd love to see more of those in the right parts of the city.
Yeah. Curious, the state now has some new affordable housing laws that are on the books now. I'm thinking about the accessory dwelling units. Is that maybe something in the future that could also be considered part of the city's affordable housing conglomerate, if you will, or affordable housing population?
I think we could. It's something we're exploring. It's still so relatively new that we're still kind of in the rollout phase between working with our partners in the planning division.
Yep.
Inspectional services, the MAPC, the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, and the states, to kind of trying to figure out what does it actually mean,
what does it mean
for
yeah.
us. And in some neighborhoods, it's going to be tougher to roll those out because they're already pretty densely populated.
Quincy Point's a great example.
Yeah, exactly. So I think anything we can do to encourage affordable housing is great as long as it's done in the right place and done respectfully.
Of course,
to the neighborhood.
It still has to meet all the local regulations.
Exactly.
The trust recently funded smaller projects, not as big as the Watsons, but the NeighborWorks came through for two recent projects with 34 and 24 units that we supported. They haven't started construction, but it is in the pipeline.
Okay.
We have another new one with the Housing Authority that they also came forward for 16 units. So those are expected to be built in the next 2 years.
Okay. So it's, a lot of these little small, kind of piecemealing it together, right?
That's right, yeah.
It's so tough, though, Joe, to develop affordable housing because, these nonprofits really can't compete with the private developers.
No, how could they?
It takes so long to get the funding lined up where they're just not as nimble as a private developer that might have the cash on hand.
It
can just, they can sign an agreement the next day,
as soon as
the property becomes available.
Yeah.
And so it's much harder for the nonprofits. So you end up usually seeing smaller projects and smaller developments because that's really all they can do. The Quincy Housing Authority project is a great example because it's the first time in decades that I know of that the Housing Authority has constructed new units.
This is right across from O'Brien Towers, I think you're talking about.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right, it's kind of on that same driveway.
Yes.
Portion as you're coming in.
Yeah.
And then with NeighborWorks, similarly, it's very hard for them to buy up new properties. What we're seeing with them is they're demolishing some of the single-family properties they have next to each other.
Yes.
Knocking it down and building, bigger developments
instead
of this, assemblage of properties.
Winter Street, I think, was an example
That's exactly right. And one on Quincy Street as well now.
Okay,
so, that's a case where they had existing old housing stock and, can make use of that by demolishing and redeveloping. And it's and that's a win-win too, because you're getting more units on now a larger space, and it's just more efficient. There's, you know, one system instead of three to keep track
right.
of, and in the long run, it's better. And
yep.
It allows for solar on top and just more efficient systems overall.
Yep. As you're both aware, the city council just approved two new transit-oriented development zones, right? One around the North Quincy T station and one over at Crown Colony. So potentially, does that help to add to the city's affordable housing inventory? You think? Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anytime there's more opportunity to permit more units,
yes.
and I think that's where the trust can step in to, help provide more subsidies, either to have some units on site
yeah.
mixed with market rate, or however it could work. Sometimes the trust fund it's used to leverage other state or federal subsidies too,
oh.
and you know that's the way
we'll put this in if the state will add this.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Crown Colony is a great example where if some of those commercial buildings are either converted to residential
yeah.
or if there's demolition and reconstruction, those will now trigger, approval through the trust, and then
yeah.
it would trigger affordable housing through those, as long as there are 10 or more units that are being proposed. And there's
right.
some pretty large, lots of
oh,
there,
those are
so.
Huge, yeah. Well, I mean, ever since the pandemic, Boston is a great example of vacant office space that, folks are now working from home. So what do you do with these great big empty buildings, right? I mean, it's not to that extent in Quincy, obviously, but to a smaller extent, there is some of that.
Yeah, exactly. Quincy is thought to be in sort of that donut
yeah.
That where they're calling, Boston was kind of the, ground zero
right.
for some of that.
Yes.
And some of the surrounding communities, we're in a better position because a lot of the folks that worked in Boston lived in Quincy,
for sure.
and so it didn't hit Quincy as hard as it did in Boston. We're seeing a lot of vacant buildings in Boston.
Yes.
And with Crown Colony, there's kind of a similar situation where there is some vacancy up there, and a lot of people think it's crazy that developers would demolish a building and rebuild. They think it's just suitable for redevelopment, but it's really not.
No.
Because systems are completely different places than
yeah.
they would be for residential buildings. So,
oh, yeah.
And it sounds crazy, but it's actually more cost effective to do a demo and rebuild.
But if you think about it, for a minute, I mean, you need separate kitchens, you need separate bathrooms, separate HVAC systems, separate electrical systems. So that would be cost prohibitive.
Exactly.
To convert, like a building like we're in now into residential.
Exactly.
You'd have to
Yeah. easier said than done.
Right.
So it's
yeah.
which just further contributes to the problem of affordable housing in general.
Right.
It's not as easy. There's a statistic out there, and we've seen it. It's absolutely true. Is that
mm-hmm.
the average cost of a new affordable housing unit
yep.
in the Greater Boston area, the cost to construct a new affordable housing unit is $600,000. One unit
wow.
of affordable housing costs $600,000, and that's because of all the things we're talking about. It's just the cost of land,
yes.
the cost of construction,
yep.
renovation, demolition that might be involved.
Labor costs, materials
costs.
There's
so many pieces. And then if you're adding federal government pieces, which these cross-cutting federal regulations, which we are responsible for ensuring that get done.
Yes.
I mean, they're great protections like environmental, review, Davis-Bacon, which ensures that laborers are being paid,
fair market,
you yeah. know, wages. Those are all good things, but it makes things cost more and take longer. And so, $600,000 for an affordable housing unit might sound kind of, counterintuitive, but
right.
that's just the world we live in these
yes.
days, and that's why these projects take so long and cost so much.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the 25-year history of the Affordable Housing Trust, you must have seen that change dramatically in that time period, right? The cost of building a unit.
Oh, it's night and day.
Yeah.
Even just in the past 5 years.
5 years.
It's gone up
mm-hmm.
Significantly.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what does the future hold for affordable housing in Quincy?
What do you think, Sherry? More units.
Yeah.
And partnership. And we continue to leverage more tools to help us to create more units and more subsidies too. And we need all subsidies from the federal, the state, as much as we can get. For example, we are a housing choice community in Quincy by the state, designated by the state, meaning Quincy supports housing creation. So in the past 5 years, we received over $1 million to support, you know, infrastructure or you know, anything you could think of that can help support additional housing creation. So funding's definitely a top priority, where we can get them from, anywhere we, you know, from local development where they can subsidize through tax credits, for example. So a lot of partnerships needs to work together to make one project happen.
Sure, absolutely.
And I, you know, give a nod to you know, our planning director Jim Fatsy. He's a great chair, Tom Fabrizio, who's the executive director of the trust, and then the members themselves. They're very engaging. These are such passionate people that really care about this issue. And when, you know, when developers come in, either to propose projects or, you know, whether it's somebody that's coming in that has a, you know, planning board application and they're coming for before the board to either provide a fee in lieu or units, or whether it's somebody applying for money, you know, our members really do their homework and they're not afraid to grill, you know, some of these people when they come in and ask them pretty tough questions.
Sure, sure.
And ask them, you know, even about leveraging. You know, they're saying, well, if you're asking for this much from us, what are you putting in?
Yes.
And what are the partners?
Yes.
Have you lined up? And if it's a developer coming in, they're not afraid to say, you know, why can't you put these units, you know, on site? Why, you know, why doesn't a pencil? So we have a really great, just very engaging, very passionate group of people, and you know, want to give credit to them too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they're volunteers. You know, they don't have to do this.
That too.
But it just shows how much they care and how much they want to be there.
Care about their community, about the city of Quincy.
Absolutely.
Right? And about the people that live here, trying to make it as affordable as possible.
Absolutely.
Before we wrap up, I want to mention again the Office of Healthy Homes and those programs, because those are important. Those are existing right now. And Sherry, for folks who want to learn more about them, what are they and how do they learn more about them?
Sure. We offer a variety of programs to help folks that wants to come into the city to purchase their first home. So we have first-time home buyer assistance. We also have funds to help repair their homes. If they're under the 80% area median income, they can apply to the program for loans to help, you know, repair their homes. And then we also have a new pilot program, which is supported by the trust fund for seniors to stay in their home. It's called Aging in Place.
Okay.
And then we have the lead abatement program for children under six, families with children, to help them, you know, live in a home that is less safe to them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So aging in place, I'm thinking things like accessible ramps, grab bars, easy access showers, things like that.
That's right, yes. Okay. We work with occupational therapists to modify any needs that they might need. It could be for their health reasons too.
Okay.
Recent projects we did as minor as just switching their door handle a round grab door handle to a lever handle.
Yes, I appreciate that, those now, actually.
Yeah, yes, so very minor repairs, but making big impacts for the seniors.
Super.
And I want to give a pat on the back to Sherry for that too, because that was a federal program that we applied for twice and just barely missed the cutoff.
Oh, is that right?
We scored so high, we were only just like a couple of points shy of meeting that. And she said, you know, I really think this is something we should do in Quincy, and so we turned to the trusts and ask them for the funding instead of the federal government and the trust members. And again, I want to thank them for their support. That's really a win-win, because now actually it's great for us because we don't have the same federal regulations that we would have had to comply with if we got the federal grants. So it actually worked out pretty well. But you know, she did yeoman's work to get that program through, and I'd love to see people, you know, take advantage of that program.
Good job.
Yes.
Good job. All right, anything else we should add right now, do you think? Reach out?
Yeah, reach out. Let us know what more we could do.
Okay.
We want to hear from the folks too, and if learn what we are doing, and then tell us what more can we do.
Okay. Yeah. Good number is 617-376-1363, or the City of Quincy's website, and the Affordable Housing Trust has a tab.
Correct.
That folks can go to.
That's right.
Thank you both.
Thanks for the opportunity.
So much,
very, very good information, and we'll have you back for an update, too.
Look forward to it.
Thank you.
And thanks for watching us here at AM Quincy. I'm Joe Catalano. We'll see you next time.